I asked the girl how long each visit lasted. She said she stayed as long as she was needed. She told me the old insurance policy would cover up to 24 hours a day, as and when it became necessary, which she thought might be very soon. The girl with the luminous eyes left, and I went back to the bedroom and showered and packed my bag. Joe came in and watched me do it. "You leaving?" he said. "We both are, you know that." "We should stay." "We came. That's what she wanted. Now she wants us to go." "You think?" I nodded. "Last night, at Polydor, it was about saying goodbye. She wants to be left in peace now." "You can do that?" "It's what she wants. We owe it to her." I got breakfast items in the Rue Saint-Dominique again, and we ate them with bowls of coffee, the French way, all three of us together. My mother had dressed in her best and was acting like a fit young woman temporarily inconvenienced by a broken leg. It must have taken a lot of will, but I guess that was how she wanted to be remembered. We poured coffee and passed things to each other, politely. It was a civilized meal, like we used to have long ago, like an old family ritual. Then she revisited another old family ritual. She did something she'd done 10,000 times before, all through our lives, since we were first old enough to have individuality of our own. She struggled up out of her chair and stepped over and put her hands on Joe's shoulders from behind. Then she bent and kissed his cheek.
"What don't you need to do?"
she asked him. He didn't answer. He never did. Our silence was part of the ritual.
"You don't need to solve all the world's problems, Joe. Only some of them. There are enough to go around."
She kissed his cheek again. Then she kept one hand on the back of his chair and reached out with the other and moved herself over behind me. I could hear her ragged breathing. She kissed my cheek. Then, like she used to all those years before, she put her hands on my shoulders, measured them side to side. She was a small woman, fascinated by the way her baby had grown into a giant.
"You've got the strength of two normal boys," she said.
Then came my own personal question.
"What are you going to do with this strength?"
she asked me. I didn't answer. I never did.
"You're going to do the right thing," she said.
Then she bent down and kissed me on the cheek again. I thought, was that the last time? We left 30 minutes later. We hugged long and hard at the door, and we told her we loved her. And she told us she loved us too, and she always had. We left her standing there, and went down in the tiny elevator, and set out on the long walk back to the opera, to get the airport bus. Our eyes were full of tears, and we didn't talk at all. My medals meant nothing to the check-in girl at Wassy Charles de Gaulle. She sat us in the back of the plane. About halfway through the flight, I picked up Le Monde and saw that Noriega had been found in Panama City. A week ago, I had lived and breathed that mission. Now, I barely remembered it. I put the paper down and tried to look ahead. Tried to remember where I was supposed to be going and what I was supposed to be doing when I got there. I had no real recollection. No sense of what was going to happen. If I had, I would have stayed in Paris. Going west, time changes lengthened the day instead of shortening it. They paid us back the hours we'd lost 2 days before. We landed at Dulles at 2 in the afternoon. I said goodbye to Joe, and he found the cab line and headed into the city. I went looking for buses and was arrested before I found any. Who guards the guards? Who arrests an MP? In my case, it was a trio of warrant officers working directly for the Provost Marshal General's office. There were two W-3s and a W-4. The W-4 showed me his credentials and his orders, and then the W-3 showed me their Berettas and their handcuffs, and the W-4 gave me a choice. Either behave myself or get knocked on my ass. I smiled briefly. I approved of his performance. He carried himself well. I doubted if I would have done it any different, or any better. "Are you armed, Major?" he said. "No," I said. I would have been worried for the Army if he'd believed me. Some W-4s would have. They would have been intimidated by the sensitivities involved. Arresting a superior officer from your own corps is tough duty. But this particular W-4 did everything right. He heard me say no and nodded to his W-3s, and they moved in to pat me down about as fast as if I'd said yes with a nuclear warhead. One of them did the body search and the other went through my duffel. They were both very thorough. It took them a good few minutes before they were satisfied. "Do I need to put the cuffs on you?" the W-4 asked. I shook my head. "Where's the car?" He didn't answer. The W-3s formed up, one on either side and slightly behind me. The W-4 walked in front. We crossed the sidewalk and passed by the bay where the buses were waiting and headed for an official vehicle-only lane. There was an olive-green sedan parked there. This was their time of maximum danger. A determined man would be tensing up at that point, ready to make his break. They knew it, and they formed up a little tighter. They were a good team. 3 against 1, they reduced the odds to maybe 50-50. But I let them put me in the car. Afterwards, I wondered what would have happened if I'd run for it. Sometimes I found myself wishing that I had. The car was a Chevrolet Caprice. It had been white before the Army sprayed it green. I saw the original color inside the door frame. It had vinyl seats and manual windows. Civilian police specification. I slid across the rear bench and settled in the corner behind the front passenger seat. One of the W-3s crammed in next to me and the other got behind the wheel. The W-4 sat next to him up front. Nobody spoke. We headed east towards the city on the main highway. I was probably 5 minutes behind Joe in his taxi. We turned south and east and drove through Tyson's Corner. At that point, I knew for sure where we were going. A couple of miles later, we picked up signs to Rock Creek. Rock Creek was a small town 20-some miles due north of Fort Belvoir and 40-some north and east of the Marine Place at Quantico. It was as close as I got to a permanent duty station. It housed the 110th Special Unit headquarters. So I knew where we were headed. But I had no idea why. 110th headquarters was basically an office and supply facility. There were no cells. No secure holding facilities. They locked me up in an interview room, just dumped my bag on the table and locked the door and left me there. It was a room I had locked guys in before, so I knew how it was done. One of the W-3s would be on station in the corridor outside. Maybe both of them would be. So I just tilted the plain wooden chair back and put my feet on the table and waited. I waited an hour. I was uncomfortable and hungry and dehydrated from the plane. I figured if they knew all of that, they'd have kept me waiting 2 hours, or more. As it was, they came back after 60 minutes. The W-4 led the way and gestured with his chin that I should stand up and follow him out the door. The W-3s fell in behind me. They walked me up 2 flights of stairs, led me left and right through plain gray passageways. At that point, I knew for sure where we were going. We were going to Leon Garber's office. But I didn't know why. They stopped me outside his door. It had reeded glass with CO painted on it in gold. I'd been through it many times. But never well in custody. The W-4 knocked and waited and opened the door and stepped back to let me walk inside. He closed the door behind me and stayed on the other side of it. Out in the corridor with his guys. Behind Garber's desk was a man I'd never seen before. He was a colonel. He was in BDUs. His tape said, Willard, U.S. Army. He had iron-gray hair parted in a schoolboy style. It needed a trim. He had steel-rimmed eyeglasses and the kind of gray, pouchy face that must have looked old when he was 20. He was short and relatively squat, and the way his shoulders failed to fill his BDUs told me he spent no time at all in the gym. He had a problem sitting still. He was rocking to his left and plucking at his pants where they went tight over his right knee. Before I'd been in the room 10 seconds, he'd adjusted his position 3 times. Maybe he had hemorrhoids. Maybe he was nervous. He had soft hands, ragged nails, no wedding band. Divorced, for sure. He looked the type. No wife would let him walk about with hair like that. And no wife could have stood all that rocking and twitching. Not for very long. I should have come smartly to attention and saluted and announced, "Sir, Major Reacher reports." That would have been the standard army etiquette. But I was damned if I was going to do that. I just took a long, lazy look around and came to rest standing easy in front of the desk.
"I need explanations,"
the guy called Willard said. He moved in his chair again.
"Who are you?" I said. "You can see who I am."
"I can see you're a colonel in the U.S. Army named Willard, but I can't explain anything to you before I know whether or not you're in my chain of command."
"I am your chain of command, son. What does it say on my door?"
"Commanding officer," I said.
"And where are we?"
"Rock Creek, Virginia," I said.
"Okay, asked and answered," he said.
"You're new," I said. "We haven't met."
"I assumed this command 48 hours ago, and now we've met, and now I need explanations."
"Of what?"
"You were UA for a start,"
he said. "Unauthorized absence," I said. "When?"
"The last 72 hours.
"Incorrect," I said.
"How so?"
"My absence was authorized by Colonel Garber."
"It was not."
"I called this office," I said.
"When?"
"Before I left."
"Did you receive his authorization?"
I paused. "I left a message. Are you saying he denied authorization?"
"He wasn't here. He got orders for Korea some hours earlier."
"Korea?"
"He got the MP command there."
"That's a brigadier general's job."
"He's acting. The promotion will no doubt be confirmed in the fall."
I said nothing.
"Garber's gone," Willard said. "I'm here. The military merry-go-round continues. Get used to it."
The room went quiet. Willard smiled at me. Not a pleasant smile. It was close to a sneer. The rug was out from under my feet, and he was watching me hit the ground.
"It was good of you to leave your travel plans," he said. "It made today easier."
"You think the arrest was appropriate for UA?" I said.
"You don't?"
"It was a simple miscommunication."
"You left your assigned post without authorization, Major. Those are the facts. Just because you had a vague expectation that authorization might be granted doesn't alter them. This is the Army. We don't act in advance of orders or permissions. We wait until they are properly received and confirmed. The alternative would be anarchy and chaos."
I said nothing.
"Where did you go?"
I pictured my mother, leaning on her aluminum walker. I pictured my brother's face as he watched me pack. "I took a short vacation," I said. "I went to the beach."
"The arrest wasn't for the UA," Willard said. "It was because you wore Class A's on the evening of New Year's Day."
"Oh, that's an offense now?"
"You wore your nameplate."
I said nothing.
"You put 2 civilians in the hospital while wearing your nameplate."
I stared at him, thought hard. I didn't believe the fat guy and the farmer had dropped a dime on me. Not possible. They were stupid, but they weren't that stupid. They knew I knew where I could find them. "Who says so?" I asked.
"You had a big audience in that parking lot."
"One of ours?" Willard nodded. "Who?" I said.
"No need for you to know."
I kept quiet.
"You got anything to say?"
Willard asked me. I thought, he won't testify at the court-martial. That's for damn sure. That's what I've got to say. "Nothing to say," I said.
"What do you think I should do with you?"
I said nothing.
"What do you think I should do?"
"You should figure out the difference between a hard-ass and a dumb-ass, pal. You should figure it out real quick." Your choice, I said. Your decision. He nodded.
I also have reports from General Vassal and Colonel Coomer.
Saying what?
Saying you acted in a disrespectful manner towards them.
Then those reports are incorrect.
Like the UA was incorrect?
I said nothing.
Stand to attention,
Willard said. I looked at him, counted 1,000, 2,000, 3,000.